You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, here in beautiful Hanalei. Listening to us here at 90.9 FM on the North Shore, 91.9 FM island-wide, and 92.7 in the Anahola Mulawa area, and worldwide on the lovely internet at www.kkcr.org. Stay tuned for the Malama Kauai Show with Ben Sullivan and our in-the-booth guest, Kapua Sprout, from the University of Hawaii at Kahuli A'o Center for Excellence in Native Hawaiian Law, and we'll be coming right back here shortly.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Right on. Thank you. And Ben Sullivan, host of Malama Kauai.
Aloha, listeners. This week's radio show continues our focus on the recent publication, The Value of Hawaii, edited by Craig Howes and Jonathan Osorio. 2 weeks ago, we had a great show with Charles Rapoon. Our guest today is Kapua Sprout, joining us in the studio, who authored an essay on water for the book. Ms. Sprout is an assistant professor with Kahuli A'o Center for Excellence in Native Hawaiian Law and Environmental Law Program at UH's Richardson School of Law. She has been a guest on the show several times before, and this visit is particularly timely given the recent major proposals for water use in multiple locations across the island, including the preliminary FERC permits that have been filed on behalf of KAUC for consideration of hydroelectric production. Kapua, thanks for joining us.
Mahalo. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's so nice to be back home on Kauai.
Give listeners a little bit of sense of what you had to say and what you were writing about when you took on the assignment of writing the chapter on water in the book, The Value of Hawaii.
Well, this book came about very quickly when John Osorio and Craig Howes decided that voters and the community at large needed more information about the things that made Hawaii truly special. And so when John gave me a call and asked if I would write about water, he said I could write about whatever I wanted to, but to really try to address the issues of, you know, where we've come from, to provide some cultural and historical context, especially for people that are newer to our islands who might not have the same appreciation as our Kekioka'aina or the people who were born and raised here. So sort of where have we come from and what are the issues and challenges that are facing us now? And in particular, where are we going into the future and what do we need to know now in order to assure that in the context of water, the values and the principles that make Hawaii truly special can be carried on into the future. And so in a very short number of pages, we tried to cover all of those issues.
And from my perspective, you did an excellent job. There's another document that's available online that you published recently, Ola Ikawai. And that, I think, had some of the same intentions behind it. What does that phrase mean, and what was your motivation for writing that?
Well, for me, ola ikawai, water is life. And like many people, I think Kanaka Maoli in particular, but many others who are born and raised here, we understand that as people on island communities, especially isolated island communities like Hawaii, fresh water has been and I think will continue to be the source of all life in our islands. In pre-contact times, it was absolutely vital for our indigenous communities. I mean, it was really the center of our Ahupua'a-based resource systems. It has brought us to where we are today. But I think because of many challenges that we're facing, including global warming, if we don't do more to manage these precious resources, they won't continue to persevere in the same capacity as we've been able to enjoy them over the centuries. One of the hats that I wear in our community is as a professor at the William S. Richardson School of Law at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And there, one of the things that I do is to head up our community outreach programs for Kahuli A'o, our center focused on Native Hawaiian law. And we recognize a huge need in the community for information on, you know, cultural context and legal resources in particular. So Ola Ikawai was the first in a series of primers for Kahuli A'o to help provide information and other resources to the people who need it most. We realize that if people have legal questions or cultural questions, it can be difficult, sometimes impossible, to be able to get answers to those, especially if you need to talk to an attorney. So while Ola Ikawai isn't intended to provide individual legal advice, it does provide, I think, the overall framework, and we hope will be a real resource for folks. In addition to providing information, sort of summarizing the laws and what the available legal handles are for folks who are facing legal issues, it also has an appendix of resources, including what the various laws are and some of the cases that might not otherwise be readily accessible.
All right. Thank you. So in that document, you talked about a lot of things. You talked about the cultural, the legal framework, all that. One of the things that struck me was that when you give the history, there's discussion about the fact that there some things, some really important concepts really did come through into the legal framework that was finally created through to where we are today. And one of the central ideas is this of water as a public trust resource. Can you give us a little bit of understanding on that?
Sure. And, you know, this goes back, I think, not just to Maoli or Native Hawaiian principles, but also to our unique situation as a geographically isolated region. Given the really limited resources that we have here, water has always been part of the public trust, which is a legal term of art, which just means that it's a resource that can't be owned by any one individual, but belongs to all of us in common. So it's not yours, Ben, or mine, or even Jimmy's. It's a resource, not a commodity, that has to be managed for the benefit of not just us here, but future generations as well. And we understood and appreciated that as Kanaka Maoli, or as Native Hawaiians, and that was really foundational in our cultural views, but also in the legal framework of management that came up in pre-contact European times. So before the arrival of foreigners here, our Hawaiian custom and tradition was what provided a foundation of law. And that's intimately tied to water resource management. In Olelo Hawaii, the word for water is vai. The word for wealth or values is vaivai, or water repeated twice. And the word for the law is kanavai. And it's really no coincidence that in isolated island communities, all of these central themes are very closely linked. And so, again, water was a foundation. It was also viewed as a kinolau. So it was actually a physical embodiment of one of our four principal lakua. So because of that, it had a spiritual significance and couldn't be commodified. And so the early customs, as well as the written laws, when those customs were reduced to writing during the Hawaiian Kingdom, clearly upheld this public trust vision. And that came forward into the territory. And but unfortunately, given the Hawaii's, you know, fabulous climate and year-round growing season, it became a hotspot for plantation agriculture. And so despite the clear language in the law that water was a public trust, it was to be managed for the benefit of all, it was hugely commodified, especially by the sugar and pineapple plantations. And so the black letter of the law wasn't respected. And really for about 100 years, water was managed for the benefit of a handful of people in the Big Five and other corporations. And it really wasn't until a movement in the 1960s and 70s where there was really a groundswell of community interest to ensure that our public resources returned to public management and control. And that happened during our 1978 Constitutional Convention. And Charlie Rapoon, who wrote the section on agriculture, and a handful of other people were really instrumental in making those things happen. So because the law had been ignored, the community rose up and ensured that these public trust protections were enshrined in our Constitution and created our state water code. So the public trust has always been a part of our management in Hawaii. Currently, it provides an important framework for how the Water Commission, which is a state agency responsible for managing our water resources within the Department of Land and Natural Resources, how they make these management decisions. But as we all know, as members of the community, despite, you know, what's written in the nice law books, that's not how things go down on the ground and in the community. And that's part of the reason that we wrote Ole Kauai, so that for community members, especially in rural island communities like Kauai, where these resources aren't being managed as they should, that people will have the opportunity to flex their own muscles and ensure that the spirit of the law is upheld.
Thank you. It's really wonderful. I very much enjoyed reading Ola'i Kauai, and it was hugely informative to me because You know, I moved here when I was 19. I came from Massachusetts. And, you know, you grew up in the suburbs on the mainland, and water comes from the tap. And you don't always have that close connection to what does it mean to have water in a community. And obviously, in places like that, it comes from far away. You don't even know the source. Whereas here, it's such an obvious thing, and we have such a limited supply. It's really powerful, and it helps immensely, I think, to understand and appreciate the various people and how they need to interact with it. So it's a tremendous resource. I definitely encourage readers to go take a look at that. Can you tell me where people can find that online?
At this point, people can go to if you go to www.kahuliao.org, so that's KAHULIAO.org. That takes you to the website for the program that I work within at the law school. And in there are links to different resources, including our primer. And actually, when we rolled this out in December 2009, we partnered with Malama Kauai, and our first community outreach meeting was here in Kilauea. And Kione helped us to sponsor that. And so we do, in addition to being available in an online edition, we do have limited hard copies available. Mm-hmm. And so there are some here on Kauai, but in addition, people can contact me if they don't have access to a printer or, you know, would otherwise like to have a hard copy.
Right on. And I can go ahead and commit to making sure there's one available at the Malama Kauai office, which is at the old Guavakai plantation. So if people want to come in there, that's now called Common Ground, but you're welcome to show up and knock on our door, and we'll make sure you can get a copy. So thank you. Thank you very much. We have a few announcements we want to make here, and then we're going to delve right back into the conversation. So listeners, allow us just a brief segue here to talk about upcoming events in the community. One that is very near and dear to my own heart is that we are on the eve of the closing of the KIUC elections, which is elections to determine who represents you at your member-owned utility cooperative. The election closes tomorrow. If you receive an electric bill and you will have also received a ballot by mail, you have the opportunity, if you so choose, to designate up to three candidates on that form, and you can vote actually online. You can vote by phone, or you can vote by mail, although by mail might be a little risky now. It's so late in the game, I'm not sure it'll get there. Jimmy?
Well, I was going to say, I think it just needs to have that stamp, right? The post-dated, postmarked.
They have to be there tomorrow. The votes actually get counted tomorrow at noon. Starting at noon is when it closes out. So potentially, if you can stick it in the mail today and you're confident in your U.S. Post Service, which does a great job, then that'll work.
Go online or make the phone call. That'd be the easiest way.
There you go. The next announcement is that coming up Thursday, March 24th, the Lihue Business Association will be presenting a program, KIUC Moving Forward, from 7:30 to 9 a.m., and I believe that's at Duke's Canoe Club downstairs at Kalapaki. That will be with KIUC's CEO, David Bissell, and so this is very much related to the conversation we're having today. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, KIUC has expressed an intention to try and develop some hydropower projects on island, and is very much interested in discussing it with the community and determining what the right direction to go is. Another announcement, Friday, April 1st, Malama Kauai will be showing Turning the Canoe at Common Ground. Turning the Canoe is a movie produced by some folks over on Maui, and it really describes things happening on Maui that are progressive and wonderful to see, and people taking hold of their community and moving towards a more sustainable future. We'll be showing that at Common Ground, Kilauea, 6:30 p.m. Thanks to the Garden Restaurant, there's going to be free poo-poos there as well, so if you're so inclined, come on out and join us. Last one, and then getting back to the program, is Sunday, April 10th, Malama Kauai is helping St. Catherine's School to put in a school garden at the school, and we are very excited to be helping them out. This is a call for volunteers. If you're interested to come out, if you want to come out and help put a garden together, then you're welcome to do that. Contact Tiana Kamen, tiana@malamakauai.org, or call 828-0685. Enough for the announcements. Let's get back into the heart of the show. Kapua, a question I'm really intrigued on trying to understand, and I think it's probably central to this whole process, is given that water is a public trust resource, how do we determine which uses are appropriate and where and how? What's the process? And I know it's an incredibly complicated question to try and answer, but it's obviously at the heart of things.
How much time do we have left? Let's see if we can.
Only 40 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, great! We should be able to cover this.
I could help. I mean, obviously. Obviously, a golf course, you know, fits in a different place than a Tero Lo'i or another use that's got some. I'm going to let you answer the question, but we'll see where we go.
So, as I mentioned earlier, our legal framework for water resource management in Hawaii is multi-tiered. So, at the very top, we have our state constitutional provisions, Article 11, Section 1, Article 11, Section 7, which make very clear, as I mentioned, that water is a public trust. Right, it belongs to all of us. That Article 11, Section 7 also creates the basis for our state water code, which is Hawaii Revised Statutes, Chapter 174C. And there are various administrative rules that interpret the code as well. So in the water code is where you'll find some of the more specific provisions, the legal handles of how to do this or that. It's kind of difficult to explain concepts in abstract, so I'll try to provide you folks with an example. One example that we talk about frequently is what happened with the Waihole Ditch case over on Oahu. And that's something I'm not sure if Charlie Rapoon mentioned when he was here a couple of weeks ago. But in that case, we have a situation that's not unlike what many of our communities are facing. So the sugar plantation that was, you know, had controlled a huge amount of water resources on that island, both on the windward side and the leeward side, announced that it was going to be closing. And so there was what was at the time the biggest battle over water over in recent history, because everybody wanted some. Uncle Charlie and other small family farmers and Native Hawaiians living on the windward side wanted to have water returned to their streams, the streams of origin, to support ecosystems, to support the environment, to support small family farming, to nurture the Kaneohe estuary and fishery, so for beneficial in-stream uses. Whereas other people wanted the water to continue to be used off-stream for some farming, but for urban and other development as well. So that case was really one of the first cases under the water code to address these issues. And what happened was that the Hawaii Supreme Court, which is charged with interpreting our Constitution, looked at what happened in the case and made some specific rulings. So I'm getting to your question here, because what the Hawaii Supreme Court did was they actually articulated what different public trust purposes were. So they made clear that water is part of a public trust, belongs to everyone. A really important thing that they did was articulate a handful of public trust purposes. So they said there are certain types of uses that have priority. Water for environmental protection. Water to support traditional and customary Native Hawaiian rights and uses. Water to support domestic water uses. So if you use a small amount of water in your home just for your own personal and household use, those kinds of uses have priority over other types of things, including private commercial uses. And so that's really how the priority lies. In addition, later Hawaii Supreme Court cases also articulated reservations for the State Department of Hawaiian Homelands as having this important public trust provision. So if you are one of those public trust purposes, you get priority over everybody else. If you are a private commercial use, you still have the opportunity to be able to use water, but you bear the burden of demonstrating that your application or your request satisfies all the requirements of the law. And so it's a slightly higher standard for people who want to use water for their own personal uses. In addition, because you mentioned golf courses in particular, there are certain kinds of uses like golf courses. For example, in the Waihole decision, the Hawaii Supreme Court said, you know, agriculture, because it's even though it's not a public trust purpose, we recognize that it's an important public purpose. And mm-hmm. so that has a higher priority than golf courses, per mm-hmm. se. And so there's a certain tiering within the legal framework. Public trust purposes at the top, and then below that, private commercial uses. And then even within private commercial uses, some uses have higher priority than others. But it's really a case in analysis that has to take place on a case-by-case basis. And so Olei Kawai and some of the other legal resources that are available help to articulate what some of those priorities are.
It when I stop to think about it, it's such an incredibly complex process. And I think part of that, you know, is why we need community to get involved, because we need help understanding where do these things need to go. The answer to the question, what is a public trust resource, is not a simple answer. And you just articulated a lot of the kind of groundwork that exists. But it's really, I mean, you know, I'm looking at the island thinking, I don't even know fully understand all the different water systems, but the water doesn't just get to one of these ditches. It's taken to a ditch, and then it goes here, and then it goes there. So determining how to move water around as a community to best benefit all those things is really complicated, but obviously critically important. So we're
yeah, and I think, you know, the best way for these decisions to be made is at the community level. And I think for, as we all know, as part of Hawaii's plantation history, the way that these plantation ditch systems were constructed were without any consultation of the affected communities. In most of the places, people came in, they may have bought up land, or sometimes they just leased land, they didn't even buy it up, and then constructed these massive irrigation systems that took water from wet, windward, predominantly rural communities and diverted them over to the drier central and leeward plains where they could be used to subsidize sugar cultivation. And so this was done without any consideration of what impact is this having on our o'opu, opai, our hihiwai, our native stream animals that require this connection from Mauka to Makai in order to survive. What impact will this have on small family farmers and other local people in the community who require having water in the stream for their household and other uses? And so and that was the state of how things were done in Hawaii for about 150 years. What's exciting now is we have an opportunity, especially on places like Kauai, where the plantations have closed, to revisit these initial decisions and determine whether or not what has been done is still appropriate, given our current needs in the community, and especially given the ongoing shifts that we're seeing as a result of things like global warming. You know, Kauai is so lucky because we have an abundance of water resources. I mean, a real wealth compared to many places, even within Hawaii. But at the same time, we need to think about how we're managing now with at least one eye towards the future. Because if we don't make some changes, our water resources might not be here, or at least in the same capacity, in order to support many of the needs and uses that we have.
And that actually brings up one of the questions I had with regards to how to figure out, you know, how to figure out where the water should flow. How do we do that in the context of uncertainty? And you mentioned global climate change, and there's some documented evidence that there is, in fact, less water flowing down the hill. Mm-hmm. So what's the methodology to do that when presumably many of these uses have a specified quantity of water that they quote unquote need to make things come together?
There are specific provisions in the water code, and again, a lot of this is really case-specific because it depends on the particular decision that's posed to the commission. Is this in the context of permitting? Is this in the context of a new well that someone wants to drill to support something? Are we in an area that has been, quote-unquote, designated as a water management area by the commission? In other words, is it an area that we recognize water resources may be threatened, either or currently are threatened or may become threatened in the near future? So there are a lot of specifics depending on the particular question that's posed. But I think in a more general sense, if we take one step back, what we know and what the commission's kuleana really is, Water Commission's kuleana, is to incorporate what we call the precautionary principle. And that's something that's very important. It's a scientific term that I think is particularly apt in situations like this, where you have imperfect scientific information. The Water Commission can't sit idly by on its hands and wait until it has perfect information in order to act. What the commission needs to do is take a hard look at the information that's been provided and then make the best decision that it can based on the information that it has. Understanding that in the face of scientific uncertainty, it should take extra conservation measures and err on the side of protecting the resource. So if we're not sure, does the stream really need 4 million gallons a day or 5 million gallons a day in order to be healthy, to support native stream animals, to seep down into our underground aquifers that provide the principal source of drinking water for our community so that we can have drinking water in the future? Well, if we're not sure, then maybe we should go with 5, at least for now. And in the meantime, continuing to do the monitoring and collect the other scientific data that we need to better inform our decisions in the future. And so it's really common sense conservation, but the precautionary principle is a scientific principle that has been adopted by the Water Commission and that was specifically mentioned by the Hawaii Supreme Court in the Waiahole decision. And at that time, it was really only one of two, well, a handful of decisions in all of the United States that relied on this specific principle to inform decision making. So in some senses, especially when it comes to management of public trust resources, Hawaii is really ahead of the curve. Or it has been, at least with respect to the legal theory. Now, on the ground in the community, we know that hasn't been the case. That despite the fabulous laws that we have, they really haven't been respected to the degree that they should.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned water management areas. Are there a number of those throughout the state? Are there any on Kauai? Or
that's a really good question. Now, the Water Commission has the kuleana to manage all of the water resources in Hawaii, whether we're talking about groundwater, so water that's under the earth that we can't see, that most of the communities, not just on Kauai, but throughout Hawaii, rely on to have drinking water. And that also applies to surface water, so the water that's flowing from Makutumakai in our streams. So although the Water Commission has a responsibility of managing all of our water resources, it really lacks the administrative tool to regulate how and where water is used, unless you're in what we call a designated water management area. And these areas can be designated either for groundwater or for surface water. Now, in practical terms, that doesn't really make sense. You think, okay, well, if the Water Commission has the responsibility to do all of this, why not just have them do it everywhere? And the answer is because it was a political compromise. At the time that the Water Code was passed in 1987, there was a lot of opposition, especially on the island of Maui, where the counties enjoyed lording over their resources and not having to be accountable to others. So in order to get the law passed, they had to come up with this trade-off. And as a result of that, there are a number of places that are designated for groundwater management. The entire island of Molokai, all of Oahu, except for Waianae, and the Iao aquifer on Maui. And so those are the only areas that are designated for groundwater, which means that if you live in any of those places and you want to drill a new well or you want to use a certain amount of water, you need to, that's regulated by the Water Commission under a permit system, except for a couple of exemptions. Now, the only area in Hawaii that's been designated for surface water management is Nawai'eha, so central Maui, the areas of Iao, Waihe'e, Waiehu, and Waikapu. And in that area, it was designated because there were significant conflicts over water use. So Kauai hasn't currently been designated for water management, either for groundwater or for surface water.
Mm-hmm. So what are the best case and worst case scenarios for the community when we're trying to sort these things out? I mean, you know, obviously it's about discussing this and making sure people are included in a very comprehensive process. But it would seem to me that one of the struggles you have in the way the law is set up and in the way the system works right now is that if there is a large entity that has an interest, they would potentially drive a process, and that creates a potential bias because you don't have a situation where the state has the means to lead a process on water designations. Is that correct?
Well, under the Water Code, designation can come about in one of two ways. It can be initiated by the Water Commission on its own volition. So if they recognize, hey, you know what, we've been doing these studies, we've been collecting pumpage reports, and we're concerned about what the water levels are in this particular community, the Water Commission chair can begin a process and initiate designation on their own. Now, one of the really exciting things to me about the Water Code is that there are also really important provisions for citizen participation. And in addition to the Water Commission being able to initiate this process, citizens can also file a petition to have to designate an area, either for groundwater or for surface water management. And before I started working full-time at the university, I was an attorney at Earth Justice, a public interest environmental litigation firm. So we represent community and other grassroots groups on a host of issues. And there I worked with community groups on Maui, both to get the Iao aquifer designated for groundwater management and then to get Nawai'eha designated the first ever surface water management area in Hawaii. So there's certainly the tools within the Water Code to be able to make this happen. with respect to designation. Now, I mentioned earlier, and I think you agree, that community-based management is always best. And because the Water Commission has faced, and you know, it's not, I'm not picking on the Water Commission, any of the agencies within the Department of Land and Natural Resources, or certainly a host of other folks at the county, state, and federal level, just don't have the resources that we need in order to do what's necessary. And so the commission really hasn't done the job that it needs to do. And so because of that, oftentimes, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and where there's conflict or squabbling in the community, that's what comes to a head, and that's how the commission has decided which issues to address first. And so, but where communities are able to work things out, the Water Commission has been more supportive of that. And so I think in the context especially of the FERC permits and what's being proposed for Kauai, I think it's really important for the proposed developers to sit down with the community and listen really hard to what's being proposed, and then take that mana'o that they get from the community members, who I often think, because they're closest to the resources, have some of the best information, scientifically, culturally, hydrologically, because they know what's going on in their own ahupua'a, to listen really hard and to take those words to heart. Because as we've seen, the kind of the history of water battles in Hawaii, what came up in Waihole, what's happening now on Nawaiha and Central Maui, are where community members are unhappy with the process. And so they've sought to utilize the legal tools that are available in the water code or elsewhere in order to resolve the issue through litigation. And it's always more expensive and more complicated when that happens. So hopefully KIUC will do the right thing.
I'm confident that they will.
I'm holding a cell on you, Ben. no pressure.
I wanted to ask about what the relationship is between FERC and the State Water Code. I mean, FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and obviously they're a part of this discussion, but they are not, you know, overarching, or are they? I mean, can you help me with that?
Well, I think what might be helpful for folks is if you could explain, and you know better than me, because your work with KIUC, sort of where things are now with FERC, with the permitting, because I think there's confusion in the community too about sort of where we are. So just sort of...
Well, I have to say first that I'm reticent to say too much, and only for the fact that I'm not a spokesman for KIUC. I'm just one of the board members, and when we deliberate things, we do it in a boardroom, and then that information is distributed by the organization. But I can say simply that my understanding is that these are preliminary permit applications, and the intent is to be able to explore and look at the resources and understand if there's an opportunity to develop hydropower on the island. But I think that there's very much an openness, from what I've seen, as to what are going to be the challenges? What things do we need to consider? What agricultural uses? What environmental uses? You know, what longstanding issues that maybe need to be resolved? You know, these are things that hopefully we are going to listen to. We're an elected board, so I would offer up that people are welcome to contact me and share their concerns. My email is pacificsullivan@gmail.com, and my cell phone number is 635-4615. You can find information on who the other directors are by going to the KIUC website, and these people want to speak to the community members. I think they very much want to do the job of representing the community at the electric utility. So that is something that I feel in my heart is important to emphasize, because we're there as representatives of the community to guide the cooperative in the best decisions that they can make. So it gives me comfort that that's the structure. And we talked before the show about that being very different from a private entity trying to develop, such as HECO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, your folks' kulana, your responsibility is to the members, because it's a cooperative. And so, yeah, it is a different situation. So to get back to the initial question, so with FERC, there's permitting that's happening, which I am not a FERC expert, so I don't propose to I don't pretend to know all of how that works, but this is sort of my understanding of at least the relative relationship between the different laws. So FERC is, the approval process within FERC is really more for KIUC as a way of trying to put a couple, if you will, on the ability to explore hydropower in different capacities. Now, the state, and so that is that sort of between you folks and FERC. Now, what happens under our state water code is, because water is considered part of our, even though I really don't like it, I mean, it's considered part of property law. And so sort of part of resources that are inherently managed at the state level. And so it's really our state constitution and water code that manages how and where water will be used. So even though KIUC will need to deal with FERC as and for this and future permitting, if it's determined that hydropower is what the cooperative wants to pursue, they will still need to deal with permitting under the state water code. Because mm-hmm. depending on this, and you know, it's difficult to speak in generalities, but depending on the specific proposal that's proposed, what community it's in, how much water is going to be taken, where it's going to be used, there are a host of permits and other procedures, even though the area is not designated, that that will need to be complied with. So, for example, if taking the water impacts the amount of water that's in the stream, you folks may need to apply for an interim in-stream flow standard amendment. And the interim in-stream flow standards are the minimum amount of water that need to be either in the stream or in a certain reach of a stream even to protect beneficial in-stream uses. So how much water do we need to protect our opu, our opai, our hihivai, to protect certain kinds of agriculture uses, domestic uses, Native Hawaiian rights, all of those things. And if what's being proposed will impact that, then that's an issue. And of course, depending on the specific method that's being proposed, other permits could also be implicated as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, at the same time, the code is really flexible. So even if you folks weren't proposing to change the amount of water that's being taken, if community members had concerns that even the current level of diversion is unacceptable and violates or doesn't sufficiently protect for public trust purposes, so things like Native Hawaiian rights or environmental protection, community members could affirmatively file a petition for interim in-stream flow standard amendment to address that. So there are a host of there's going to be a ton of permits you need to get on a whole bunch of levels. Yep. But there's certainly, because the bottom line really, and I think what's important for the community members to know, is that the water code is going to help to regulate where and how water is used. And so there'll be opportunities both, well, there'll be requirements imposed upon KIUC. There are also opportunities for community members to engage in that process as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's really very insightful, and it's helpful to, I think, to really make sure that people are hearing that there is going to be extensive discussions and extensive consideration of all kinds of issues. And again, as I said earlier, my hope and expectation is that we can do a really great job in that process. I do want to open it up to callers, because I'm guessing that people would love an opportunity to call in and give their mana'o and hopefully focus that on asking a question of Kapua, because we are very lucky to have you here in the studio. So if you can do that, please do. It looks like we may have one right off the bat. Just put the hook in the water, and there you go.
So we'll see. Yeah, and you know, as I mentioned earlier, I do hope that there's going to be, well, there should be extensive processes and a lot of opportunities for community participation. But I do hope that things will be able to be front loaded so that the cooperative and other folks can sit down with the community and get their input. Because, as I always like to joke, but it's a sad truth, that compliance is always cheaper than litigation. So it would be great if people were able to air their concerns and be proactive in finding a solution, as opposed to having to go the other way.
Are there some? Okay, it looks like we've got a
caller. We do have a phone caller. So, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All righty. Thank you for joining us. You have a question?
Yes, my question is, I believe that your speaker is a lawyer.
She is.
Is that correct?
Trained.
I didn't catch that.
Yes, she is.
Then she is probably familiar with Dr. Keanu Sai's pending case in the United States District Court.
She's nodding her head.
I'm aware of it, but I'm aware of what's going on, but I'm not intimately familiar with his pleadings.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm a Kanak, native of the land, born and raised in Hawaii, and also a graduate of Kamehameha Schools. And Basically, why I'm calling in is because of the fact that the so-called state is not a legal entity. It's a de facto government that was put into place through the manipulations of the federal government of the United States. And so in regards to the water, they're breaking the law because they have no right to administer American law in a sovereign nation. And so that's basically my question is, how can they administer American law in a sovereign country? It's illegal because they broke the treaties that they had with the Kingdom of Hawaii. And as you probably know, the Liliu Assignment and the Liliu Agreement of Restoration, the United States government is supposed to administer kingdom law here in Hawaii until such time as the kingdom is restored to its proper authority. And that's basically what the lawsuit is about, mm-hmm. that Keanu is trying to get the courts to recognize. And on the 17th, I believe it was, the state legislature passed a resolution saying that they have to review both of those agreements with Liliu and make a determination as far as how they have to proceed, because they realize that treaty violations were committed. And so, the thing with the water is like totally up in the air, because like I said, how can the state, which is an arm of the federal government, administer American law in a sovereign nation? Yeah. It's wrong. Well, and that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your mana'o, and thank you for calling in to share that, because I think it's a very important, it's really important historical background that people need to know and understand, because not everyone is aware of the true history of Hawaii and what happened with the illegal overthrow and everything else. So I appreciate you sharing that comment. I think that's really helpful. I'm not an international law attorney, and I'm not in a position to sort of comment on the merits of Keanu's lawsuit. What I can say is, knowing many of the people who came together during the 1978 Constitutional Convention, is what people were doing was they recognized a huge need in the community that some people feel exactly as you did, that there, and you know, I agree that there are questions about the state's jurisdiction, and many people have, you know, for generations been seeking to address that through various international and other fora. But until that resolution is made, and until the inherent sovereignty of Kanaka Maoli is recognized and appreciated by everyone else, but the people who are involved in the 78 CONCON, at least the people I know who are involved, sought to do was get a better handle on current management and what was going on now, and provide community groups, Maoli and other, with opportunities to try to address this, so that these decisions, because they were made and they will continue to be made, at least we would have some input in the process. And so it's not a perfect solution. I hear your concern, and all I can say is that I'm at least, I appreciate the handles that we do have available in the code, because at least for me, I'm not comfortable letting things happen without at least having an opportunity to provide input. So I'm glad that the water code, as imperfect as it is, does provide opportunities for citizens to better manage resources in their own communities.
And we have another caller. Caller, are you still there?
Yes.
Caller, you're live on KKCR's Malama Kauai Show.
Aloha. Thank you. I'm glad to have a chance to call in and talk to Kapua Sprode. I know she's well informed, and to hear that there is a process, the water code, that, you know, would allow potential development of hydro on this island. I'm just, my question is, I don't believe medium-sized hydro or anything like above 2 megawatts has been developed on Kauai lately, since like the turn of the century. But are there projects on other islands where the process went into effect, where the water code was followed, and the building of a medium-sized 2, 3, 4 megawatt hydro project was facilitated, did succeed. How much experience has our state seen with the development of hydro, say, in the last 20 years? That's my question. I'll hang up.
Mahalo for your question. I think it's a great one. And unfortunately, I don't have an answer for you. The short answer is I'm not sure. Our water code was enacted in 1987 and has been in effect since that time. Much of the hydro that's in existence, like we have here on Kauai in Wainiha and other areas, was developed very early on for many years by sugar plantations and other folks in order to provide electricity. Although there, I know of a lot of, you know, micro hydro, small hydro projects that people have put into place over the years. I haven't closely been tracking medium sized ones, and so I'm not sure what the state of that is.
Mm-hmm. And we do have another caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You're live on the air.
Aloha, Kapua and Ben.
Aloha.
I have a question regarding the term non-consumptive use. I've heard that term used, especially in regard to hydropower, where the water is taken from the stream and returned to the stream without any consumption per se. Can you speak to that? I don't know if it is a legal term or not.
It is a legal term, but it's not, I guess I don't have as much experience with that term under Hawaii's current provisions. And so, and I'm not sure whether in the context of, I can't address that in the context of the FERC permits or other issues. My basic understanding is that there are certain kinds of uses, like, for example, water that's taken off stream for lo'ikalo restoration or for lo'ikalo use, where the water comes off of the stream, it's used to irrigate tower patches, and then what's important is the through flow, so that the water flows through the lo'i and then goes back into the streams. And so in that case, even though it's viewed by many people as a non-consumptive use, there is still some use of the water by the kalo. And so it's, so sorry, I'm not being very helpful for you.
No, you're doing a great job. You know, thank you. And that does clarify it a little bit. Then the other term, I'll take my answer off the air, but the other term that I run up against all the time is something called prior allocation. Mm. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so much. It's a great show. Mahalo.
And actually, I think Ben wanted to chime in on the non-consumptive use.
Well, I think if we just put it in the context of a proposal for hydropower, the thing we have to recognize is that we're going to have to move the water. And the water is going to have to fall a considerable elevation, and then that is going to limit where that water can be delivered. So that's what we have to be sensitive to, primarily from where I'm sitting. But there is obviously other concerns in terms of what happens in the stream and things like that, and you've already addressed those. But maybe the second question.
So the second question for folks who are just tuning in was sort of what's prior allocation and what does that mean? In a lot of places, not including Hawaii, they have a system of water use and management where it's sort of first in time and first in right. So if you get to the stream first, your ohana was here for 1,000 years, and you folks have your existing manawai or your existing diversion for lo'ikalo, then you're the first user and you have priority in other places. Under the current framework for water management that we have now, Hawaii follows, Hawaii has a model water code, which means that that there are specific provisions in permitting regarding how things are handled and managed. And under those conditions, prior allocation is not as important as in other areas. That said, if an area is designated as a water management area, then existing uses, whatever uses were in existence and as of the date of designation, those uses would have priority over new uses accept new uses that are public trust purposes. Sorry, a lot of convoluted legal language here. But so the short answer is, you know, prior allocations would, of course, be those allocations that were given out before others. In Hawaii, because of the kinds of laws that we have here, it's not as important unless your area is designated as a water management area.
Okay. Okay. You know, the thing that came to mind when you started talking about other places and models, I lived in Colorado for a few years when I was going to school, and you can't even have water catchment in Colorado because the water doesn't belong to you even already as it's falling out of the sky. So, you know, that's not the right way to say it. It already belongs to someone else. So, you know, to me, it's a blessing that the concept, at least in some form, was held on to from the historical model, which is to say this public trust resources is, you know, the state is a trustee to manage it and that is something that obviously jumped out very much in your writing and I was very appreciative of. So thank you for that.
It brings something up that Ben and I were talking about and that a number of the callers already have talked about in different ways is those competing interests and what is the weighted formula that says the community should benefit greater than whether it's corporation or other uses that don't have maximum value for community benefit. And the first caller saying, you know, how can we trust our government when we suspect our government's validity by its very nature? And how corruption sometimes infiltrates at different decision making, not necessarily because people are crooked or that they're wanting to, you know, personally gain from their decision making, but that oftentimes certain interests have more, like you said, it's the squeaky wheel, but sometimes that it's not the squeaky wheel, it's the well-polished and it's the valuable because there's speculation, because there's development, because of the opportunity to gain. How do we go forward, especially with the KIUC permit, because it is generating a fair amount of controversy and there is ambiguity and we're suspect at times. What is the process? And I'm asking both of you because we want to, at the grassroots and at the community level, drive the decision so that community benefits. And I'm not sure what the process is going to be, but, you know, our water commissioners, they're elected officials. No, they're appointed. And so we're going to have to work with systems here to hopefully benefit our community.
The simple answer is that, you know, we have an idea and we're going to start by listening, I think. And again, I have to emphasize, as I did earlier in the show, that I'm not a spokesman for KIUC. I'm a member of the board that makes decisions. And one of the beauties that I gave a reminder on earlier in the show is that that's an elected board. So if you get an electric bill, you get a vote, and you very much get to participate both that way, and you can, and people are welcome to attend our monthly meetings and share their mana'o there as to how this process might be managed. We also have quarterly meetings that are going to be announced well in advance throughout the year, and there'll be opportunities for people to give input. So to me, that's the easy answer. The hard answer is, do we succeed? You know, it's more on the other side. Are we successful? And I certainly hope so. But, you know, I think we all have our desires and I think we all have our concerns, and we just have to get them on and talk about them. And that's part of the intent here today, is just making sure that people are paying attention, people are aware of the system that we exist within today and what the history is as well, and that we do our best as a community.
And Kapu, I want to share some appreciation. The callers had called in, didn't want to ask questions, but were just impressed with the wealth of information. And as one woman said, from one Hawaiian to another, it's just really encouraging to hear you speak. And I want to tap into your mana'o and resource that you can share with our community. What do we as a community need to do to kind of engage in that process, but know what are we going to have to do to ensure that the processes? We asked Mina Marina on this radio show, what did she think about this proposal? And she said, well, you know, the FERC process is at another level. Ultimately, we locally are going to have a final say. What is the final say in this matter?
These processes, whether you're looking at what's happening specifically on Kauai now or in other communities, are so much of it can be driven by the community. I mean, the community, well, and we're in a very unique situation here because KIUC is a cooperative. And so ultimately they are accountable to their members in a way that Hawaiian Electric or Maui Electric or any of those folks wouldn't need to be. Part of this process will be driven by KIUC as far as timing and phasing and how they elect to move forward with various permits at different points. But I think there's a huge opportunity now for the community to scrutinize what's being proposed, and I understand that it's still pretty vague at this point. I mean, this is an exploratory phase, so as far as the specifics of how things are going to be done, that hasn't been decided yet. And that's, to me, that's part of the opportunity, is I think community members really need to organize to start talking story. And I know I've talked to a bunch of folks. I haven't even gotten to talk to everybody that that has tried to get in touch with me about this issue, because this is a really big issue. But community members need to talk story with each other, need to do their homework and figure out, okay, if there are proposals in these different areas, and that's going to mean tapping more streams in Koke'e, what is this going to mean for Hanalei? People, I think, on the Ahupua'a level, need to organize and find out and do their homework. So sort of, you know, potentially what would this mean? Sort of what's our best case scenario, exploring if this were to happen, what would be acceptable or not? Looking at, you know, this is 2011 now. Things can be done if they are going to be done, and I am not here as a proponent of hydro or anything else, but if things are going to be done, what's the absolute best way we can do them to maximize output and minimize community impact? And, you know, I don't know what the answer to that is. There may be a solution, or depending on what the community feels like, it may not be workable. And if it's not workable, then to me, you know, at the community level, what's your ultimate vision for your resource? And how can you help to make sure that your resources are more proactively managed? Because the water code, and, you know, I'm not going to sit here today and tell you that the water code is an answer to all of our questions, because it's not. But it's one tool that we have available in our toolbox to better manage our resources for the future. And for people who have concerns about whether or not there's enough water in our streams in order to support not just existing uses, but future uses, because we need to remember that we're operating in a degraded state now. I mean, we're operating after, you know, over 100 years of plantation diversions. So for some people, restoration is needed now before we can even begin the discussion of, you know, how much more can be taken and for what purposes. But bottom line, I hope the community really organizes and mobilizes to take advantage of the tools that are available here to best protect our resources for the future.
Mahalo, Kapua. It was really a great opportunity for us to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Mahalo.
Thank you. And you're listening to KKCR. Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, 90.9 FM up in Hanalei, 91.9 FM island-wide, and 92.7 Anahola Molawa. Please stay tuned for Dee's Diner coming up from 12 to 1. And again, you've been listening to the Malama Kauai Show with Ben Sullivan and our guest Kapua Sproat from the Ke Huli A'o Center for Excellence in Native Hawaiian Law. Mahalo.
How would they feel about the changes of our land? Just imagine if they were around and saw highways on the sacred grounds. How would they feel about this modern city?